Con your behind me. Jai Radha Madhava, Kunja Vihari. Jai Gopi Janna Vallabha, Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Dasyura Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Kunja Vihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Viridraja Kacharya Stutra Sushri Shimad His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Dhantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Gaur Samabeta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. All grace to the assembled devotee. All grace to the assembled devotee. All grace to the assembled devotee. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Purusha Sukta confirmed, text 39. Word meanings, sa, he, asha, the very, adya, the original personality of Godhead, purushaha, the Mahavishnu incarnation, a plenary portion of Govinda, Lord Krishna. Kalpe kalpe, in each and every millennium, Srijati creates Ajaha, the unborn Atma, Self, Atmani, upon the Self, Atmana, by his own Self, Atmanam, own Self. Saha, he, Sanyakchati, absorbs, Pati maintains cha also. Sa esha adya purusha.
Sa esha adya purusha.
Kalpe kalpe srijatya ja.
Kalpe kalpe srijatya ja.
Atmatmanyatmanatmanam.
Atmatmanyatmanatmanam.
Sa samyachati pati cha.
Sa
esha adya purusha. Kalpe kalpe srijatya ja.
Kalpe kalpe srijatya ja.
Atmatmanyatmanatmanam.
Atmatmanyatmanatmanam.
Sa samyachati pati cha.
Sa
esha adya purusha. Kalpe kalpe srijatya ja. Atmatmanyatmanatmanam. Sa samyachati pati cha.
Sa esha adya purusha.
Translation: That supreme original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, expanding his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, the first incarnation, creates this manifested cosmos, but he is unborn. The creation, however, takes place in him, and the material substance and manifestations are all himself. He maintains them for some time and absorbs them into himself again. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The creation is non-different from the Lord, and still he is not the creation. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 9.4 as follows. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagaravyakta murtina matsthani sarvabhutani nachaham teshu avastitaha. The impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth is also a form of the Lord called avyakta murti. Murti means form. But because his impersonal feature is inexplicable to our limited senses, he is the avyakta murti form. And in that inexplicable form of the Lord, the whole creation is resting. Or in other words, the whole creation is the Lord himself. And the creation is also non-different from him, but simultaneously he, as the original personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, is aloof from the created manifestation. The impersonalist gives stress to the impersonal form or feature of the Lord and does not believe in the original personality of the Lord. But the Vaishnavas accept the original form of the Lord, of whom the impersonal form is merely one of the features. The impersonal and personal conceptions of the Lord are existing simultaneously, and this fact is clearly described both in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and also in other Vedic scriptures. Inconceivable to human intelligence, the idea must simply be accepted on the authority of the scriptures, and it can only be practically realized by the progress of devotional service unto the Lord, and never by mental speculation or inductive logic. The impersonalists depend more or less on inductive logic, and therefore they always remain in darkness about the original personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. Their conception of Krishna is not clear, although everything is clearly mentioned in all the Vedic scriptures. A poor fund of knowledge cannot comprehend the existence of an original personal form of the Lord when he is expanded in everything. This imperfectness is due, more or less, to the material conception that a substance distributed widely in parts can no longer exist in the original form. The original personality of Godhead, Adyaha, Govinda, expands himself as the Mahavishnu incarnation and rests in the causal ocean, which he himself creates. The Brahma Sanhita 5.47 confirms this as follows. Yakaranarnavajale bhajati smayoga nidramananda jagaranda saromakupaha adhara shaktimavalambya param samurtim Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Lord Brahmaji says in his Brahma Sanhita, I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who lies down in the causal ocean in his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, with all the universes generating from the pores of hair on his transcendental body, and who accepts the mystic slumber of eternity. So this Mahavishnu is the first incarnation in the creation, and from him all the universes are generated and all material manifestations are produced, one after another. The causal ocean is created by the Lord as the Mahatattva, as a cloud in the spiritual sky, and is only a part of his different manifestations. The spiritual sky is an expansion of his personal rays, and he is the Mahatattva cloud also. He lies down and generates the universes by his breathing. And again, by entering into each universe as Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, he creates Brahma, Shiva, and many other demigods for maintenance of the universe, and again absorbs the whole thing into his person, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9.7. Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mam ekam kalpakshayi punastani kalpadao visrajamyaham. O son of Kunti, when the kalpa, or the duration of the life of Brahma, is ended, then all the created manifestations enter into my prakriti, or energy. And again, when I desire, the same creation takes place by my personal energy. The conclusion is that these are all but displays of the Lord's inconceivable personal energies, of which no one can have any full information. This point we have already discussed. Om Agyana Chimirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmaya Shri Gurve Namaha. So Esha Aja Purushaha Kalpe Kalpe Shri Japtya Jaha Atmatmanyatmanatmanam Sasamyachati Paticha. So the Sanskrit in the verse talks about Purusha, Ajya Purusha, the original personality of Godhead. Ajya is translated as the original personality of Godhead, and Purusha, the Mahavishnu incarnation. So the verse, literally the way it's written, is that all of this is coming from Mahavishnu. But our acharyas have explained that actually it's not coming from Mahavishnu, it's coming from Krishna, coming from Govinda, through Mahavishnu. The source, the original Ajya, the original source is Krishna or Govinda. Well, Prabhupada talks about Krishna here in this purport and Mahavishnu. And then, but in his translation, he says, that supreme original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, expanding his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, the first incarnation, creates this manifested cosmos, but he is unborn. So Mahavishnu appears to be great. Of course, he is great. That's why he's called Maha. Mahavishnu. Everything in this material world is coming from him. But he's a portion of a portion of a portion of Krishna. So behind it all is Krishna. Now, Prabhupada begins his purport. It's interesting to me that it seems like Prabhupada is making a couple of points simultaneously. I was a little confused at first. Well, I'm always confused, but I was confused here. The Prabhupada says the creation is non-different from the Lord, and still he is not the creation. So then he quotes this verse from Bhagavad Gita, Maya Tatamidam Sarvam. By this, Maya Tatamidam Sarvam, Jagadavyakti Murtita. I pervade this universe in my avyakta murti. So Prabhupada is saying here, actually he's making two points. He's making a point that the creation, the matter itself, the material of this material creation, that's Krishna. It's Krishna's energy. And he's also making the, so in that sense, it's him. He pervades it because it's his energy. And in another sense, he's present everywhere in his impersonal feature, Brahman, because everything, ultimately it comes from Brahman. So this is all in a sense, of course we say this is achintya, bheda, abheda. Several times in the purport, Prabhupada mentions how it is Krishna, but at the same time it's not Krishna. So that's the inconceivable. How can something be something and then not be that thing at the same time? That's a paradox. Yeah, my mind cannot grasp it. I've been studying recently in the Bhagavad Sandarbha. Jiva Goswami is really hammering on this point of how Krishna is inconceivable. His form, especially his form, is inconceivable. He talks about different aspects of Bhagavan, how they're all inconceivable, actually. But the first thing he talks about is his form. Because his form, it is a form, but it's everywhere. Now we tend to think that Krishna's energy, the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, is everywhere, and Krishna's in one place. Goloka eva nivasatya kailatma bhuto. Of course, the Brahma Samhita says that. But the point that Jiva Goswami is making in this Bhagavad Sandarbha is that Krishna's form is everywhere, too. You don't have to think that it's only his energy that's everywhere. His form is unlimited. And this is inconceivable. It's translogical. Because a form has to have boundaries. How can it be a form if it doesn't have boundaries? But no, his form is unlimited. But at the same time, this is stated in many places, how Krishna, of course, God is unlimited. And he's not only unlimited by his energy, he himself, because he's not subject to the limitations of time and space. So time, we know, Krishna exists beyond time. He comes and goes in time. This is one of those, to me, is another inconceivable kind of thing, how you have these two worlds. One of them has time in it, and the other one doesn't have time. So how do they come together? How does one thing go from one to the other? Go from a place that has no time? You would think, well, at some time in that world, you'd have to enter into the world of time. But somehow it doesn't work that way. Many years ago, I was reading a book. There's a scientist who's also, I think he's a theologian, Paul Davies, his name is. He's British. I read a couple of his books. And this is one thing that really got him hung up. He couldn't understand. How can there be a world without time that somehow interacts with this world of time? So these things are paradox. They're beyond logic, actually. You could say they're transrational. What does that mean? They're not that they're irrational, but they have a different kind of rationality, a spiritual rationality that our minds, which are bound by time and space, can't comprehend. They can't accommodate it. We just can't get it, exactly. In any case, Jiva Goswami is making this point, and that Krishna's form is actually unlimited because it's beyond space and beyond time. So it's actually everywhere. And what he seems to be implying, I think I'm getting this right, but it's not so easy always to understand. We sometimes think, now this of course is true, I've been thinking about this morning, that Krishna expands himself into multiple forms. And this is one of the features of Krishna. Just like in the Rasa Lila, there were so many Krishnas. Or in Dwarka, there were so many Krishnas. There was a Krishna in each one of the palaces. So you think that Krishna made different forms of himself, and still every one of those is still Krishna. But there's another side of it, that there's actually just one form. They're not duplicate form. There's just one form, and it's Krishna, and he's everywhere at the same time. So that's, you know, another step in mind-blowing, that Krishna, this is why, again, it's beyond logic. And again, he's everywhere, but still, it's often said, the philosophers, the Nyaya philosophers, they discuss whether the Brahman is of infinite size or infinitesimal size, or somewhere in between, medium size. So Krishna is actually all of these things. He's completely unlimited. He's smaller than the smallest, anoraniyan, mahato mahiyan, in the Upanishads it says. He's greater than the greatest, and he's smaller than the smallest. The smallest thing is considered to be the jiva, because the jiva is infinitesimal. If you take that literally, I often make this point, you know, when you have a fraction, the bigger the number at the bottom, the smaller the thing is, right? 1/8 is smaller than 1/4, and 1/16 is smaller than 1/8. So if you put 1 over infinity, and that's as small as you can get. You can't get any smaller than that. It's infinitely small. But Krishna goes into that also. So he's smaller than the smallest. But it's also said, he appears, I don't know what the Sanskrit is, but he has a medium-sized form. Of course, it's manushya, rupa, a form of a human being, which is medium, like us. We're medium-sized. We're not infinite or infinitesimal. So Krishna also appears in a form as perceivable to us, and it's a kind of medium form. And to prove that he appears in a medium form, he got tied up to a grinding mortar. How can you tie up something that's infinite? He's infinite. His form is infinite. It's everywhere. So how can Mother Yashoda tie him up? You can't get around the backside of something that's infinite, right? But she did. She did. Still, it's Krishna. It's not that he's not Krishna. He is Krishna. He's God and he's everywhere. But still, Mother Yashoda tied him up. So again, this is translogical. It's how can something that's infinitely infinite in size be tied to a grinding mortar? So this is the inconceivability of God. People think they have God understood in some way. He's just this guy up there, you know, whatever he's doing. And his whole concern is about us. Didn't have anything else to do but think about us all day. But there's so much more, huh? In our philosophy, understanding. That's why Jiva Goswami has written the Sandarbhas. He goes into such detail, and he quotes so many shastras. It's just amazing. I'm always so amazed when I think of the Goswamis, how they quoted so many literatures. It's not like, you know, us, we can all have the whole everything on a thumb drive. But they have to gather these things from here and there. And it's not so easy to research them. I mean, you read them. They must, of course, they had stupendous memories. They read things and they would remember them. So Jiva Goswami, he's making so many profound philosophical points and proving his points by quoting so many things. So this is what something I was reading about recently, and it ties into this. This Mahavishnu, we know the Mahavishnu, he's so, of course, universes are coming out. Somebody said they're in a seed-like form, so maybe they're very small, tiny, and then they expand. But unlimited universes are coming. Everything is unlimited. We hear about the material world is unlimited. Now maybe I suppose you could say, well, not literally unlimited, but it's so big and so vast, we can think of it that way. But the word is used, so we can also take it literally. Why not? Christian can do what he wants. The spiritual world is unlimited. It's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described how each of the Vaikuntha planets is, I think it's said they're unlimited, or at least they're described as being so big that the whole material world, which is unlimited, can fit in, you know, one neighborhood in one of the Vaikuntha planets. And there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets. And so this is God, as Prabhupada would say. They say God is great. They don't know how he is great. We know, the Vedic literature describes. And then this level of which God is everywhere. What is that? Oh, Kunti Devi in the beginning of her prayers. Namasye purusham tva jyam ishwaram prakate param alaksham sarva bhutanam antar bahira vastitam. So this is the amazing thing. Of course, she's looking at Krishna. She's talking to him directly. This is her first prayer, Kunti Devi's prayers, Krishna. And she says, you're in everything and you're outside of everything, but nobody can see you. Why is this? If you're everywhere, why can't we see you? Actually, this is, of course, another philosophical question the people challenge. Because we have in the Vedic literature people who have direct darshan of God. So for some, like impersonalists, they say, therefore that form that they're perceiving must be material. Otherwise, with this body, how can I see God, or Brahman? Brahman is, and in Vedic literature you have all these words that talk that he has no this, no hands, no feet, no foot, no head, no all of these, none of this, none of this, and so on. So they say if anybody sees, apparently sees, God, that is just some manifestation of sattva-gun, some trick of the, you know, avidya, material energy. It's not actually transcendental. But of course we know that because Krishna is unlimited, he can do, you can say, the impossible. He can allow us to see with these eyes, not exactly with these eyes, but in these bodies, he can reveal himself to us. That's what it's all about. If he's all-powerful, how can you say he can't reveal, he can't make himself into a form that you can perceive? Of course, we experience that every day because he has revealed himself through the deity, the Archa Avatar is the form of Krishna. We're actually seeing the Lord directly, not a symbol. He's directly there, present before our eyes in a form that we can experience. So Krishna has so many inconceivable energies. I was thinking, there's a discussion on a group that I'm in online has come up repeatedly, this idea of oneness and difference. Some devotees have questioned, well, how is it inconceivable? Because we have this example. We have the example of the sun and the sunshine. So that's what it is, one and different. The sunshine is one and different from the sun. So they say, it's not inconceivable, we can figure it out. But it has to be something more than that. Someone has proposed, no, what is being said is that we're completely one with God, and we're completely separate from God. But these two things have to coexist. So that's part of the inconceivability of it. But I was thinking another way of looking at it is, many places you find that Krishna's shaktis are inconceivable. So if the shakti itself is inconceivable, which means we're also a shakti of Krishna, an energy of Krishna, we ourselves, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the soul is inconceivable. That's one of the qualities, where in the second chapter he talks about different qualities of the Atma. So one of them is achintya. So, you know that verse, and there are those, some look on him as amazing, and so on, that verse. So, we can't actually conceive, even ourselves, we can't conceive ourselves, which is another inconceivable thing, actually. There's a question of Vidura to Maitreya. He says, how can the jiva, which is chit by nature, how can it become achit? How can it forget itself? That's part of its swarup, its very nature, is to be self-aware. That's what it means to be chitkana, a particle of consciousness. So his answer is, it can be done because of Krishna's achintya shakti. Krishna can do the impossible with his inconceivable potencies. So I was thinking one of the ways to explain this, simultaneously one and different, how is this inconceivable? Because each side is inconceivable. Krishna is inconceivable, and we're an energy, and we're inconceivable. So the relationship between the two is naturally going to be inconceivable as well. So we have an analogy, but that's what it is. It's an analogy to help us get some kind of grasp on what the principle is. But we're not, in one sense, really grasping it, because it is, as Jiva Goswami has coined the term, achintya bheda bheda. One and different at the same time, inconceivably. So this comes out in the purport repeatedly. Prabhupada has made this. And he often points out that the impersonals, they can't accept the personal because they're stuck on this principle that it's all one. It's only one thing. A Brahman, it comes from the root, which means the greatest. So the greatest is everything. What can be greater than everything? So Brahman, or in a sense you can say it's reality, the nature of reality, the source of everything. Of course, Vedanta Sutra defines it like that. So this idea that it's all one, which is given in a number of verses in the Upanishads, so they can't budge from that. They say it's all one, that therefore this material world is really not, it doesn't actually exist. There are different examples that are given. They like the horn of a rabbit. So you can't really talk about the horn of a rabbit because rabbits don't have horns. Another one is Akash Pushpa, which means flower growing in the sky. So they say when you talk about things in the material world, you're talking about something that doesn't actually exist. This world is really not here. So of course what we say is there is oneness. But that oneness is vishesha. It means it has distinctions. There is actually difference within the oneness. There's variety within the oneness. Of course, it's not only Jiva Goswami, but also other acharyas like Ramanujacharya. They've refined this concept of oneness. And of course, this is the explanation. The energy and the energetic are one. They're the same thing. We often hear, Prabhupada talks about Vaikuntha like that. Sometimes he says, everything is one there. So you think, Well, there are people and there are animals and there's all this variety. So what does he mean that it's all one? Of course, the way we look, we would say, well, it's all spirit. It's all, you know, Chit Krishna's Chit Shakti, or his internal potency. Swarup Shakti is the eternal residence of Vrindavan and the Vrindavan itself. So it's all made of the same stuff, consciousness, ultimately, or Satchidananda. In that sense, it's one. But within that, still, there is variety. Oneness is boring. There's unity. There's unity, but there's variety, which makes it enjoyable. So these things are, of course, it's an important concept. Otherwise, there's no need to worship Krishna. Why should you worship Krishna? We're all Krishna. We're all God. You just have to realize it. So it's so dangerous, actually. And as it's said, I think Madhvacharya makes this point. Jiva Goswami may also make it. Maybe it's a common thing. It's said that, yes, there's oneness and there's difference. We say that. And sometimes we may emphasize one or the other, but Vaishnavas emphasize the difference. We don't want to think so much that we are Krishna. I think probably at one place in the Gita, doesn't he say it's something like, we're like little Krishnas or something like that. In one sense, we are Krishna. So because we're one with Krishna, this is a fact, it said it. Ekam Brahma Dutiya Nasti. There's only Brahma. Brahman's Krishna. Brahman Dutiya Nasti. There's no second thing. Literally, it's what it says. There's just one thing. There's no second thing. So this is true. It's in the Vedas. It's in the Upanishads. We have to accept. Prabhupada mentions in this purport. We can't figure out these things with our brain. We have to accept what the Upanishads say. So they say that, so we have to accept it. But there are also so many statements that explain the difference. So we have to accept that side too. So it said that Vaishnavas, they like to think more of the difference. I'm not Krishna. I want to love Krishna. I want to serve Krishna. So we think in that way. And of course it's true. Both sides of it are true. We're part of Krishna, but we're also separate, so we can exchange rasa with him. Ultimately that's what it's called. Rasa vaisa. The absolute truth is rasa. It's from the Taittiriya Upanishad. A very important verse, actually, section of the Taittiriya Upanishad that talks about this. Ananda, the absolute truth is rasa. Rasa means exchange. You don't have rasa, and you don't get ananda without rasa, really. Therefore we have bhakti rasa amrita sindhu. We study the whole ocean of bliss that can be dived into by exchanging with Krishna. So this is our emphasis, of course. We read about the greatness of Mahavishnu. I always like to think, when we read about Mahavishnu, how great he is. So this is a great, his Aishwarya greatness. But his Madhurya greatness, or Madhura greatness, is more powerful than his Aishwarya greatness. The power that he exhibits to create this material world is awe-inspiring, obviously. But his sweetness, by which he conquers everything, controls everything, ultimately it's his sweetness, that's the greater power that he has. Actually, one way you can look at it, you can say, it's easier to control things than it is to control people. Right? You control things with muscle and might, you control people with your personality more, right? If you're very sweet, then you can control people. So that takes a greater kind of power. You can control the resources of the country, but ultimately, if you want full control, you have to be able to control the people. So Krishna's, his greatest power is in his sweetness, his ability to control. And then, of course, we have the wonderful aspect of Krishna, that he voluntarily, even though he's Ishvara, the supreme controller, he voluntarily subordinates himself to his devotees. That's how great his and infinite his love is. Bhakta Vashyata, he's controlled by his devotees' love. This is another one of the inconceivable things, that the unconquerable can be conquered. So this powerful Mahavishnu, he has his source in Lord Krishna, who has so many wonderful sweet qualities. I'll stop here. I was going to read, let me just read, I had some words here, but this is Vishwanath Chakravarti's translation, the way he translates, because in this verse there's this atmatmanyatmanatmanam, so you have all these atmas here. So he translates, Mahavishnu without birth, unborn, Aja. Mahavishnu without birth, the soul of all beings, creates, maintains, and destroys himself by himself in himself. So in parentheses it says, destroys himself, parentheses, the universe, by himself in himself. So he does it himself, he has the power, and it's all within him, but at the same time it's outside of him, the material energy. It's outside of him, but it's also him because it's his energy displayed outside him. So Mahavishnu destroys himself by himself in himself. Atmat manyatmanatmanam. I thought that was interesting. All right, any questions or comments? Let's see, who do I call on first? Gadabraja? We usually don't get questions.
So does time exist in the spiritual world? Eternal, it's eternal time.
Yeah.
Always now, right?
Yeah. There's time there. It's a different kind of time. It's said in that Brahma Samhita that doesn't pass away for half a moment. So time, you can say that serves Krishna there by allowing his past times. Things have to unfold in a certain kind of spiritual time there. But nothing decays. What is time in the material world? It kills everything. It destroys everything. So that doesn't happen in the spiritual world. So it's not like so many things. That's why in the Vedas they talk about Krishna not having eyes or ears or all these things, because they're not like ours. So the same thing, there's some kind of time, but we don't really understand how it works.
So you're making the point that Krishna is everything. And we might say that, well, he is distinct. But he says, I'm everything and yet I'm apart from everything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm everything, but, you know, and I can be understood as I am standing for you by unalloyed devotional service. So I think that explains it pretty clearly. There's no...
you know? If it's that explains it for you, that's fine. I'm everything, but I'm not everything. Okay. But that's what he says. He's showing the paradox himself. You know, it's beyond our... These two things. There's a... I think it's one of Aristotle's first principles. Something... What is it? It's called the principle of identity or something like that. I forget what it is. It's like a thing is what it is, but it's not something else. Something like that. Right? Some principle like that. So Krishna is everything, but he's not everything. So that's a paradox. It doesn't make sense, really, to our ordinary minds. Now, you can, of course, we accept it. Krishna said it, yes. But how can it be? How can he be everything, but then turn around and say, well, actually, I'm not.
He said, I'm apart from everything. You know,
he is everything. That's the word we're hearing right here.
But then you're making another point with Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu comes from him. But then the energies that Mahavishnu is emitting is not his, but it's Krishna's. But can't Mahavishnu have all these, you know, when he comes out of Krishna, he has all of this energy, I mean, you know, which is separate from Krishna. But you're saying that it's not Mahavishnu's energy, but it's really everything.
Well, ultimately everything is Krishna. Krishna is acting in these, you know, how does it work? How do we know? It's all spirit. We can only think enough with our time and space bound minds, so we tend to think in a certain way, you know, like nest, just like they have these Russian nesting dolls, right? One inside the other. So you remove one and there, you know, you remove Krishna and there's Mahavishnu inside or something. It doesn't work that way. Somehow they're all existing eternally. But they're all coming from Krishna. And at the same time, Krishna is separate from all of them. Krishna, in one sense, he doesn't even give a thought to what's going on in the material world. He's only thinking of Radharani. He's not thinking about anything else. Or he's just thinking about, the Acharyas point this out in the Damodar Lila. Actually, Krishna was afraid of Mother Yashoda and that stick. Oh, Mother, you never came at me with a stick before. So they point out, I think especially Vishwanath Chakrabarti, maybe Sanatana Goswami, don't think Krishna's just play-acting here. No, he's actually afraid of his mother. Kunti Devi makes the same point. She says, I'm just bewildered. How can you be afraid of your mother? You're God. So how can it be? Mahavishnu is creating and destroying universes with a breath, unlimited universes, and he's afraid of his mother? He's coming from Krishna who's afraid of his mother. So these are, you know, this is God. We try to somehow fit it in to our brains, our conception, but we can oversimplify things. So we have these analogies to somehow get some picture of it, but ultimately, these things are inconceivable. That's why we have the word. Inconceivable. Yes, Pandari
Prabhu. You mentioned about how the binding Damodar, how you put a rope around something that has no inside or outside, but the amazing thing was it's just two fingers short, and then adding some more, and then still 2 fingers.
They said they used all the rope in the village, I think, and still it was 2 fingers too short.
So from infinity, how do you get 2 short?
Of course, ultimately she was successful because of her bhakti. One of the important points in the purport was that the impersonalists cannot understand how something divided up into so many different parts, but and not disappear, not divide either the thing or the person, how he can remain there even though he divides himself up and distributes himself in so many different parts.
Yeah, they have a heart. Well, because they're thinking in a material way. They're thinking if all of this is Brahman, which it is, actually, in a sense. So they're thinking, well, the original must not exist if everything has been created from that. If it's all Brahman, that means there's no separate Brahman still existing. So that's why we say, well, this is his energy, which is the same with him and different from him. So he can create this with his energy, and he's not depleted. Of course, this verse, Om Purnam, it explains that. Om Purnam Adapurnam Purnat Purnamudachyate. So it doesn't diminish. We also, of course, there's the example in Brahma Samhita about the candles. This is about incarnations of the Lord, or different forms of the Lord, but the same principle is there. If you have one candle, you can light an infinite number of other candles with it, and that original candle doesn't diminish at all. So it's because it's not material. That, of course, that's the main point, probably saying they're thinking in some material way. Like you take up a piece, take a piece of paper and rip it into 100 pieces, and the original's not there anymore. But it doesn't work that way with Krishna. Krishna can create an infinite number of himself and not diminish in the least. Because that's the nature of the absolute truth. It's not limited the way everything we know and experience in this world is limited. Yes, Vraja Raja Sukta Das.
I think the title of this chapter is the Purusha Shukta Confirmed.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, what is the Purusha Shukta? Is it something in the Rig Veda? Or my thing is something else.
Yeah, there's a Purusha Sutta, a prayer to the Purusha, the Maha Purusha, which is generally the way it's translated is, of course, this prayer was offered to Lord Vishnu, is directly offered to Lord Vishnu, but the way, if you, it's not that long a prayer, actually, you can find it online. It talks about how the demigods wanted to worship the Lord, so they used different parts of his body to get the sacrificial ingredients, so they'd offer sacrifice to the Lord. And then the prayers are there also, glorifying the Lord.
So there's this, yeah, the very famous prayer, the Purusha Sukta prayers. Sahasra Shirsha Purusha begins, Sahasraksha Sahasrapak. So that's what, so this chapter, I mentioned in my last class, the first part of the chapter up to verse 17 is glorification of Lord Vishnu as we would understand him, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, or maybe Kshirdakshaya Vishnu, that form of the Lord. But then, the first part was about the universal form, Virat Rupa, and then we get into Mahavishnu and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and so on. So the Purusha Sukta can be viewed in both of these ways, both as the Virat Purusha and as the Mahapurusha. It says that Lord Brahma worships the Mahapurusha on Brahma Loka. This is described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where the Mahapurusha has infinite faces and infinite legs and infinite heads and arms and so on. So you wonder, how is Brahma worshipping someone like that? Well, Brahma's pretty extraordinary, that's for sure. So yeah, Purusha Sukta is a prayer in praise of the Lord and his different features. So the main principles come up in this chapter. Which would you say? Mig Veda? Yeah, I'm not sure which Veda it's in. I'm not sure, actually. I could speculate and say this Sama, because the Sama is mostly hymns, but I'm not sure which one it is. So I won't speculate. Kadavaja won't let me speculate, so I won't speculate. Okay, Sarangataku Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you. We've heard that Krishna is in every atom, mm-hmm. So I'm trying to understand his impersonal aspect, the personal energy. Is it because he's unmanifest and there's no relationship with him? You know, even if he's in every atom, how it's in one sense it's not impersonal.
Yeah, that's true. In one sense, it's not impersonal because Krishna is personally present within the atom. But we hear both things. Definitely the Brahma Samhita, which says that, also talks about the Brahman, how everything is coming from the Brahma Jyoti. So that's there. So it's explained in different ways. Now the atom, I'm not sure, of course the atom that's described, Paramanu, is not what we think of as an atom. The way it's defined in the Vedic dictionaries is the atom is the smallest material thing, whatever that is. However, what is it? I don't know. I don't even know what matter is. Try to understand what spirit is. I don't even know what matter is. Because you keep going deeper and deeper, right? And you say, well, where? Because every time you have something, you say, well, what's it made out of? You never get to the point of saying, right? Because you always have something, so you say, well, what's that thing made out of? Then you say, well, that's made of this other thing. And then you say, well, what's that thing made out of? Right? You keep going. It seems like it's infinite regress. So what is matter exactly? Now, some people say, well, it's just energy. So, all right, if you think that explains it, that's fine. What's energy? Okay, what's energy? So even matter is inconceivable, what to speak of spirit. So that, anyway, the point is that Krishna was in the atom, isn't within the atom. Actually, it says, at least the way it's translated, Krishna is present in full. So you say, well, Krishna is present in full. That means Krishna is everything. So that means everything is within every atom. Wait a minute. Whoa. Talk about inconceivable. Then everything that's within everything has to have everything within it. And, you know, this is what people do to drive themselves crazy.
There's another consideration is that sometimes Krishna is said to be he's never alone.
Yeah.
So all his associates, but there's another, I think Vasudev Krishna or Dwarkadish Krishna is Krishna without his energy.
Prabhupada says that in one purport. He says that Vasudev is Krishna without his energy, which is really another mind-boggling one. How can Krishna exist without his energy? So it seems to me it's just a conception. It's some kind of conception. It's not that there's actually a reality like that. Krishna's hiding away somewhere by himself with no associates or even cows or peacocks. But so it's a way to conceive. If you want to think of God and his energy, So the God that you're thinking of, you can call him Vasudeva, and his energy is everything else. But it's not exactly literally true. It's like, how can you have the sun without the sunshine? You can't. It's not real. Okay, Sikadi Prabhu.
Well, you already stole my thunder there, though. But that's it. In one sense, it's impersonal, only if you want it to be, because Krishna fulfills the desires. Because, like it says, Krishna is energy, or, you know, how could he be alone? Krishna's at the foundation as a person. That's the reality, and it's our desire to not be with him, therefore he fulfills the desire. But apparently, he's there everywhere, all the time.
It's also, you could take it just another way of saying that Krishna's everywhere. There's nowhere where he's not. How could there be some place where he's not? He's everywhere.
Right?
So you think of the smallest thing. It's not that he's not there. He's there, too. He's everywhere. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.